Sporting Kansas City sit atop the Western Conference standings in first place. They're 6-0-1 at home on the year. They've won six in a row, and they'll be back at Children's Mercy Park on Saturday night at 7 o'clock when they take on the Montreal Impact, a game you can listen to live right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You can also watch on Fox Sports KC and the Fox Sports Go app, and tickets are still available at sportingkc.com. Sporting Kansas City midfielder Benny Failhaber joins us on the show now. Good morning, Benny. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Nate. How about yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. Before we get into the world of soccer, I know that you're a man who follows all the sports. You're very active in fantasy football.
Come on, man. Don't bring this up.
You know where we're going?
Are you bringing up basketball?
Yep. You're a big Cleveland Cavaliers fan, correct?
Yep.
Now, are you a front-running Cleveland Cavaliers fan? I know you're accused by your teammates of being a front-running fan. Is that true?
That is not true.
Who was your favorite 1980s Cleveland Cavalier?
Ooh, 1980s? I wasn't even born until 85. So I could tell you the earliest I remember rooting for the Cavs was Sean Kemp and Dan Marley were on our team. But I don't think I really watched any with Price as the point guard. Price, right?
Yeah.
The point guard that was really good?
Yep.
Yeah, that was a little bit too early for me. But yeah, I mean, I was a fan of the Cavs, but it was really hard to really follow because they were just so terrible.
Look, I'm a huge LeBron James fan. I am a bandwagon Cavs fan. I only cheer for the Cavs because I want to see LeBron James win. I don't think he's got a shot. I don't think they have a shot in this series. Do you?
I heard that in practice, Durant and Curry got in like a fist fight and they both broke some fingers. So
that would be about the only way, right?
Had that story been true, I think we would have had a chance. Actually, I think we have a chance if Durant got hurt, but that's pretty much our only chance. I think Durant is just makes that team be the best team of all time, to be honest. So I don't think LeBron can just do it. You know, I think they can win a game if everybody pitches in. But I mean, the Warriors are just a better team than the Cavs right now, unfortunately.
Best team ever. So you are with Vegas that they would beat the Bulls team that won 72 games.
Oh, the Cavs would beat the Bulls team. LeBron's better than Michael Jordan, so.
Oh, I mean, boy!
There really is, if anybody wants to argue that, they're going to have to bring up points to support the Jordan role, not the LeBron role at this point, in my opinion.
So, look, I'm actually...
The only thing Jordan was ever better than LeBron is scoring. That's it.
Well, that's
everything
kind of
else. LeBron's better than him.
And I'm not going to argue for Jordan. I am kind of on your side on this. I don't know if I've been willing to fully say it. I think it's the conversation is legit. Most people just want to laugh that conversation off and say that Jordan's still the greatest.
The thing for me though, Nate, is that whether it's great players of the past or great teams of the past, people have such a hard time accepting that somebody now is better than somebody then,
right,
or a team now is better than a team. I don't understand, like, why is it so difficult for people to accept that somebody's better now? It's, you know what I mean? If LeBron were ever to actually, in people's minds, Jordan, and in 30, 40 years from now came somebody that was head and shoulders better than LeBron, people would be like, oh, well, he can't be better than LeBron. Same thing with soccer. Like, people can't accept that Messi's better than Pele by a country mile, or Maradona as well. I mean, it's just, I don't understand people that can't accept that people in the nowadays are better than the people from 20, 30 years ago. It's just engraved in their heads that person has to be the best of all time. So,
well, like the fact that I think that rap music from the 1980s and early 90s is 1,000 times better than any rap music now. Is that kind of the same thing?
I agree with you there, though.
Okay. All right. So that's not just me being old fart. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
But that's just a personal opinion. I can understand people liking rap music now better than than then, and I'm not going to get it, you know, in their ear about it. But
no, rap music now sucks compared to rap music.
I like the 90s music, rap probably a lot better. Just in hip-hop in general in the 90s are pretty good.
It was organic then. It's studio-produced crap now for the most part. That's the difference. So it's we got off onto a tangent there. You said Messi, though. Messi better than Ronaldo? How come you didn't say Ronaldo?
I just think Messi's a better player than Ronaldo, even though Ronaldo is, I mean, easily it's them two as the top two players in the world right now. But I just think the things that Messi can do are more important than the things that Ronaldo can do. I just think that the way Messi dribbles, the way he draws defender to himself, it obviously opens up space for other guys and is able to, you know, create something with such little space, I think is unmatched by Ronaldo. And obviously there's things that Ronaldo can do that Messi can't. I mean, he's very, very good at scoring with his head. You know, he's got a better, you know, shot from distance than Messi. So, I mean, he's got some things, but obviously he's a specimen in terms of physique. But I think in terms of pure technique and ability, I think Messi is unmatched.
Okay, so by the way, I just want you to know, Benny, that the argument that could have happened here was with Jake Gutierrez, our producer, who loves Kobe Bryant, does not want to acknowledge any LeBron James accomplishments. And when you said that he was better than Jordan, he literally took his headphones off and walked out. He hasn't come back. Right now we have someone else running the board, Jason Justice. So he can't have the argument with you. That was how upset your comment made him. I will say that
I don't get that. I don't get that.
See, there's like an aura around Michael Jordan because he went undefeated in the finals.
I know. Yeah, but why? He lost in the first round. I don't know how many times. It's just people. That's what I'm saying. People get so stuck up on the past, and nobody can ever beat it. If God himself came down and played basketball, they would say he's not better than Michael Jordan.
Well, look, I think it's a silly standard to say, well, because he never lost in the finals. Like, somehow it's a mark against LeBron James that he makes the finals every year, you know?
Right.
To me, that, like, it's better to not make the finals than to make the finals and lose. That doesn't stand up to me. But I'm going to turn the tables on you a little bit, since you said that, you know, you can't stand it when people say that that somebody in the past is always better than whoever is. They can't admit that somebody that's coming after them is better.
Yeah.
Is Christian Pulisic better than you?
I hope so for U.S. soccer's sake. No, but he's got an opportunity to become obviously the best U.S. player of all time. I think you know, you have the Landons and the Dempseys, and then probably some goalies in there too that are, you know, world class players for the U.S. But I don't think any of them, well, I know that none of them were being as successful as Pulisic is so far in his career at his age. So, I mean, he's still super young, so there's still a lot of years to be played for him. But he's on the right path to become, you know, the biggest star, at least one of the biggest stars of U.S. soccer.
So I really was just asking you that to give you a hard time more than anything. but a more specific question. We've spent a lot of time lately talking about the U-20s and their trip to the quarterfinals in the U-20 World Cup. Eric Palmer Brown, one of your teammates, was on that team. I spoke with him last night, and one of the things that excites me about that team when it comes to the future of American soccer is that roster is littered with guys who are actually full pros. They're professionals at the age of 20 or younger, which has been a shift because in American soccer. You tell me, how long ago was it that maybe the entire U-20 team for the U.S. would be a bunch of college guys? And how different, am I making too big of a deal out of that, or do you think that is a significant shift for the future of American soccer?
Well, it is a significant shift, and it's obviously a big part of it is how the, you know, the MLS clubs now have academies and have, you know, basically from, I don't know how young they go, but I think maybe 12s or 13s or maybe even younger, they have kids that are being brought up to become professionals for that club team, whereas, you know, I don't even know, maybe 5 years ago or a little bit longer than that, that didn't exist. So when I came through the 20s, you know, 12 years ago, I guess, it was probably, I'd say, maybe half and half, or maybe a little bit more college than pros in the 20s. So obviously it's a big difference as to where it is now. But I think it's something that, of course, is going to help us develop better players in the future, and it's something that is definitely coming from the way MLS is being developed nowadays in terms of academies and youth players being brought up through the system.
You went to college before going overseas at a very early age to play. Do you think, I mean, how much of it's identification, so to speak? Like, how many people knew that you were going to be a really good soccer player at that time? Is that part of the issue? Is that something that Americans still need to get better at?
Well, I don't think that there was that many people that probably thought that I was going to become, you know, a pretty good soccer player at that point, because I was pretty much unrecruited out of high school and went to college as a walk-on. And then even at UCLA, I wasn't really one of the – we had a class of eight players, my freshman class, and I was obviously coming in number eight on the pecking order. And maybe throughout, you know, the first year, I you know, went up from eight to, I don't know, maybe somewhere in the middle. We had guys like Chad Barrett, who obviously still playing in the league, who's probably, you know, one of our biggest recruits. And we had Patrick Ioane, who played a few years. And we had a few other guys that were above me. So I wasn't really, you know, one of the big guys even in my own class at UCLA. And so it was kind of by chance a little bit that I got the opportunity to play with the 20s with Ziggy taking over the program. And then I just did well with it when I got on the team. But it was one of those opportunistic things. So I don't know. I think it's tough to say, because there's a lot of players that develop early and there's a lot of players that develop late. So somebody that's not necessarily at the top of their class at 18, 19, 20 years old can eventually develop into a much better player when they, you know, they're 22, 23, 24 or whatever. So it is hard to kind of definitely know who's going to become a great player at an early age. I think you got to be patient with some players, but there's no doubt about it that the way that we're going about it with academies and having players train more than once or twice a week with club teams, how it used to be with me, that goes a long way into being able to see, you know, who's going to be able to develop and who's going to have that ability to become a professional.
Did you develop late, or were you underappreciated for what you bring to the team? In other words, you hear a lot of talk that in the past Americans maybe have valued the stereotypical attributes of other sports, size, power, athleticism, and maybe undersized players who have the skill and vision and technical ability, you know, didn't get valued as much. Was that the case for you, or did you just get a lot better later than maybe people than other guys did?
I would say it's probably a mix of both of those things. When I play with my club team, Irvine Strikers in California, we were one of the best teams in the country. Yet we didn't have anybody that was really on any ODP team, you know, state team or anything, regional, national team. But we, you know, we won our state every year. We won regionals, I think, 3 years in a row, maybe 4 years in a row. And we went to nationals and won at once. So we were a really good team, but we just, for whatever reason, there was nobody that really stood out from our team. But within our team, obviously there was, you know, I was one of the best players on our team. And there are a few other guys that fit into that kind of same category that didn't get really sought out too much by colleges. But I think to some degree, yes, I was a little short, skinny kid with soccer abilities that maybe weren't enough to, you know, to convey college coaches that, you know, I could potentially play at that level because of, you know, how small and frail I was, I guess. So I think that does have an effect. But at the same time, I do think that I developed more later on, at least for the professional game, you know. So I think it kind of goes a little bit of both things.
We're visiting with Benny Failhaber. Let's move on to Sporting Kansas City, Benny. You guys were in first place in the Western Conference. Peter Vermees told me early on in the season that this team had the chance to be the best technical just team in terms of the way of playing the game the right way that he's ever coached. for Sporting Kansas City. You're in the middle of that. Is this team becoming that? I mean, where is this team when it comes to just your overall soccer ability compared to the teams you've been on with Sporting so far?
I think that there is the potential of us becoming the most, you know, technical team that I've been on since I've been here. We have you know, a center back that, in my opinion, is the best player on the ball in MLS out of the back, which is Beasler. We have, you know, Graham Zusi, who's a midfielder playing at right back. We have a goalie who's become infinitely better on the ball from 2 years ago to now. Ike isn't the most technical player in the world, but he's become so much more sound on the ball, I think, partly because of the players around him and partly because of how we want to play, but you can see that the confidence is there for him to play. Seth's a guy that's comfortable on the ball, and then obviously you have Ilya in front of them, who's potentially the most technically gifted player on this team in terms of just being able to keep the ball, you know, ushering himself out of pressure and just maintaining the possession for us. And then, you know, we have some really skillful players up top with Gerso, Latif. You have obviously Dom, who can, I won't say it on the air that he's very skillful, and make sure that you tell him that, but he's a guy that is so difficult to mark by the way he throws his body around and the way he dribbles. And even if he doesn't dribble someone cleanly, he's able to, you know, get through with you know, the tenacity that he has. So, I do think that we're a team that can really become the most technically gifted team that I've played on, especially within MLS. But I don't think we're there yet in terms of the finished product. We're very good from coming out of the back all the way to maybe, you know, two thirds up the field. But in the last third, we still have to figure out little ways to, you know, break down the other team with quicker passes, quicker movements. And that's something that we've been working on, obviously, every day of training to improve on, but it is a work in progress, and I think we're headed in the right direction.
It's certainly been really fun to watch so far this year, and I mentioned at the outset here that you guys have won 6 in a row at home, 16 unbeaten at home, which is the best in the league. So you guys are the best home form of any team in the league right now. But I have noticed.
I think Houston's better than us.
Well, from an overall record this year, they're 7-0-1, right? And you guys are 6-0-1.
6-0-1, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'm talking about you guys have the longest unbeaten streak that's active in MLS going back to last year.
Got it. Understood.
I'm trying to give you credit here, Benny.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get your stats right.
Hey, I've got them up here, man. Stats can do whatever you want them to do. But it is a growing trend. I just want to get your thoughts on this before we let you go.
I want to know if Jake's back, actually.
You do. Wow. Jake is back now. He's here.
I'm not going to
put his headphones back on.
They're on. I was listening to you. I'm not participating in the ignorance of that conversation. I had tried to be the bigger man and just walk away.
You are bigger than him physically.
Right.
Did
his phone die?
More upset about Kobe than Michael Jordan.
Well, that's not even a debate anymore.
No, yeah, that's not even. That's LeBron's better than Kobe. I'll openly admit that. Because, I mean, to sit there, I fought
it. A better scorer than LeBron.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true. I mean, if there's...
Also, shoot 50 times more per game.
If there's 10 seconds left in the game in the fourth quarter and you need a guy to win the game, I'm going to take Kobe taking that shot over LeBron.
The difference
is... I would take that as well.
The difference is, though, that Kobe takes that shot, even if there are three guys guarding him and somebody else on his team has a better shot. LeBron takes the shot if it's a good shot or he hits somebody else on his team for a better shot.
But the difference is that Kobe creates a better shot than LeBron does. Kobe can create his own shot.
On his own, that's true.
For himself.
Yeah.
But not a better shot for the team. And that's why LeBron's teams are better than... LeBron is a better team player than him.
Okay.
Anyway.
Kobe's a better scorer. Would you rather be a better team player or scorer?
Team player. Oh. I'd rather win.
It depends. Depends what kind of players you have on your team.
That's right.
That's true.
Who are you playing for?
Let me get back to this question. I want to finish up with this question because...
Nate, your question sucks, dude. We're talking about basketball.
You don't even know what my question is yet, bro. Because
he still knows it sucks.
As you're speaking, Saad Abdul-Salam is passing me, who's a Cavs fan, and Sony Mustavar, who's a fake Golden State fan.
That's all right.
And they're listening to our conversation.
That's all right. They could be a fake Golden State. Right. It's going five games and it's done. They might steal one tonight.
I don't even know if it's going to five games.
It might be a sweep.
Yeah. Bob, what do you think?
Saad's the only legitimate fan of all you guys because he's actually from Ohio.
You know what?
Saad?
Yeah.
I'll give Benny credit.
Saad's from Ohio.
The fact that he was a fan when Sean Kemp was on the Cavs.
Yeah.
I had to go.
We suck.
I was like,
was he really on the Cavs?
Yeah, that's what I was like. Well, what? Sean Kemp didn't play. Oh, yeah, 1998, played for the Cavs. It's, you know, I'll give you credit for that one. I didn't, yeah. Not dropping knowledge.
Saad's the only one that actually gets legitimate credit for being a fan of either of these teams because he's actually from the state that the team is from. Look. Are you still there? Did we lose you, Benny? Did he hang up or did he?
I don't know. He might have been like, I'm done. Time to
Your
go
question
to
sucks, Nate. I was going to get some perspective on him on why home teams are winning at a ridiculous pace in MLS because it's historic. Like, they're winning home teams. There's a greater home field advantage in MLS right now than in any time we've seen. And Benny would actually be the kind of person that could tell you why. I will tell you this, the best home field advantage, even if Benny wants to argue that Houston's is better, is at Children's Mercy Park. 16 games unbeaten is the longest active streak in MLS, and you can be a part of it. SportingKC.com for the tickets. There are tickets available to Sunday's game against the Montreal Impact, so get your tickets at SportingKC.com and be a part of it. All right, Benny, final thing. I know you probably got to get to training since guys are walking past you and everything. My question for you was this, because you look at the league and you pay attention to it. Why are home teams winning more now than maybe ever before? I mean, the home field advantage seems to be a greater advantage now in MLS than at any other time. And I'm curious if you have some theories as to why that is.
That is a tough one. I definitely don't have any definite reasons as to why. My guess is one of the biggest things is that whatever year, I think maybe last year or 2 years ago, it started becoming a bigger trend. And now teams, because of that trend, they know it in the back of their heads kind of thing. So it's almost like as if you really, you play a different style almost on the road than you do at home. And I think we're one of the teams that don't do that. We try and play kind of the same way away from home as we do at home. And I think we've maybe gotten a little bit unlucky to not get results, some results on the road. But I do think some teams just kind of come in and they're happy to, you know, grab possession of the other team and kind of sit back and try and, you know, sneak one or maybe get a 0-0 result. So that kind of leads to just a lot of games that the home team just dominates. And I think that might be one of the biggest reasons. So technically there's just a difference in how people play on the road and at home, but I really don't know if that's the only reason or if there's something else, but it is peculiar how, you know, how much better home teams are than the away teams at this point in the league.
So maybe a self-fulfilling prophecy is what you're saying it becomes. By the way, just to wrap things up, somebody tweeted us this: Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, final 24 seconds of fourth quarter games.
That looks extremely doctored. Check that picture out. It looks extremely doctored.
What do you mean by doctored?
Look at this, the graphic.
Are you going to give me a stat right now?
He's going to give you a stat, but look at the numbers, at Jordan's numbers.
Yeah, it's highlighted because he's the best.
Gonna, right, no, 50%. No, no.
50%.
I thought you were going
to... Two different fonts.
I thought you were going to give me a question as to which one I would want taking the shot.
50% from Michael Jordan, 41% LeBron James. Kobe Bryant hit 25% of his shots in those situations.
Dude, those numbers are the two different fonts, dude. That's a doctored photo.
Totally true. Nope.
I'd like to know how many of those numbers, not percentages, because I feel like Kobe probably shot like 10 times more than LeBron ever has.
He did. So, see?
So...
Benny,
I mean, I don't know that. I think all those stats are a little bit silly, but I don't know. I think those guys were better scorers than LeBron. But when you take everything into consideration, for people to just not talk about how good LeBron is and how he's at the minimum in the conversation for the best player of all time, then I just can't talk to him anymore. That has to be
that's would be the end of the conversation.
Oh, he's a top five player of all time. Absolutely.
On that note,
top five. You're going to be scraping for players to find four other guys to fit in with him.
Wilt Chamberlain? No.
I mean, can Wilt Chamberlain drive?
He could score 100 points.
I mean, I didn't watch him. I know he had long arms and he kind of did the hook shot a lot.
Yeah, he can score 100 points in one game.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, were there defenders on the court?
Well, I mean, he was being guarded by 6'7 Bill Russell, who won like 8 titles, you know, so it was a different era.
He won 11 titles.
Was it 11? Yeah. 8, 11, whatever.
Robert Horry won 7, so he's better than Jordan, though.
Right, that's right. Like, that's the only criteria is how many trophies you won. That's it. Look, we've kept you for half an hour.
Here you go.
Sorry.
Nate, I'm going to have to let you go, man.
Yeah, keep going.
Sorry for the crappy questions, Benny, but I'll see you tomorrow night at the Royals game.
All right, I'll see you, man.
All right, but that's Benny Failhaber.
Your questions suck.
He said one question, and I hadn't even asked a question yet.
Your questions suck. Anyway, how many games in the playoffs has Michael Jordan scored under 15 points in his career? How many times has that happened?
I'm sorry, say the question again.
So, in playoff games, Michael Jordan's career, how many times did he score under 15 points?
Zero. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, zero.
How many times has LeBron done it?
Seven.
Seven times. And he's also
probably played in more playoff games.
Yeah, right. I think we've talked about that. He's played in a lot more games.
Right. And he scored under 15 points 7 times.
I don't care. I mean,
just saying. Jordan never did that.
Right.
That means he showed up.
Well, he scored every night. I mean, how many of those games?
Yes.
And how many of those games?
Yes, that means he scored every night.
But in how many of those games did LeBron James have double digits in assists or rebounds or both? I mean, you know, it's I mean, look at how many times.
Hey, you're the best player in the world or best player ever. You better score more than 15 points.
How many
points?
Times did Michael Jordan's teams get bounced in the first round of the playoffs? How many times did Kobe?
I don't have those numbers.
Or how many times did LeBron? I mean,
I'm not. Yeah, I don't know about Kobe. I mean, that's.
I meant LeBron, not Kobe. But I mean, we got a break. We are so far dead. Over. Let's take a break. Rustin Dodd, at some point after 5 million commercials when we come back.